Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is the Carlin versus Joe podcast on ESPN Radio.
Big day, huge week, monumental month. We're not going to screw around. It's time to get to work. Carlin versus Joe, ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Thank you. Most important thing we'll say all day, thank you to you, the listener, for coming out, spending some of your time with us. It is always greatly appreciated. The big man is out. Hugh Myers in his stead. This is a big show for me. You and I have known each other for a little bit. We've never actually done a show together, if I'm not mistaken.
No, not never. We've hung out together. Yeah. We've been able to do side shows together, but we've never done a show. So, yeah, man, thanks for having me along for the ride. I appreciate you.
You're standing. I like it. You're standing.
Yeah. Hey, man, look, you can't come in with all gas, no brakes and be sitting down, right? I mean, if it's all gas, no brakes, I got to stand up and bring it. I got to bring it.
Kind of putting my own show right in my face right there.
That's what I do.
Pretty impressive way to start right there. It's like, damn, that is the motto. I never stand for this show. I can't be inconvenienced. Need to be comfortable. But excellent point. All right, we got a lot to get to today. A lot to rip through. We're going to begin right here with this.
Minnesota by three. Edwards going to pull up for three in transition. Back iron. Nas Reed grabs it and flushes it. The missed three, and Reed went down the lane unabated and slammed it home.
Kestisher, fantastic work as always on ESPN Radio. Whoops for the defending champs in game one of the Western Conference semifinals. Minnesota walks into Colorado and takes out Denver 106-99 behind a monstrous performance from the Ant-Man, Anthony Edwards. 43 points on 17 of 29 shooting. Q, plenty to get to on him in just a moment, but let's start with him after the game. For all the people that were surprised as to what Minnesota did in game one, maybe you should listen to this.
We're just coming out to play. Yeah, it's not about introducing us to nobody. We know who we are. We don't care what people say or what people think about us. We're a collective group. We trust each other. It's all love between us, and we're well coached. So, you know, we coming out, and as long as we got each other back, it don't really matter what anybody else thinks.
Number one defense in the NBA, budding superstar in Anthony Edwards. We've been trying to tell people for a while this team is dangerous, and now they sent a big message in game one. How much trouble is Denver in here?
I think they're in a lot of trouble, right? And not because they are taking Minnesota lightly, but Minnesota's just that team. They're really good, and they believe they've been really good all year long. That's why they've been where they have been. And for the casual NBA fan, most people are being introduced to Minnesota right now. Now, like Anthony Edwards says, they know who they are, but the majority of, like I said, casual fans don't really know how good they are. So all of a sudden, they go in there and they win game one. It's like, whoa, hold on, wait, what? What happened? What happened to the defending champs? Yeah, game on now.
Series price has flipped. Denver found themselves in the neighborhood of around minus 200, minus 220, meaning you're risking about $220 to win 100 on the Nuggets to win the series. After that game one upset, Minnesota is now your favorite to win the series. Price is minus 135, so you're risking minus $135 to win 100. Where do you stand right? Let me start with this because we weren't working together prior to today. Mm-hmm. Where did you stand on this series before? Where do you stand on it now, prediction wise?
Well, I thought it was going to be competitive. I thought Minnesota was going to give them all that they needed, but it's Denver still. At the end of the day, I feel like, you know, the Joker, obviously Murray, what they have going on there, Gordon, they just know how to get it done. So I felt like it's going to be a tough competitive series. Thought that Denver was going to win it. Still have a good idea that Denver is going to make a series of this and give and probably come out with the win, but nothing would shock me by Minnesota at this point. And I love the legend that's being built with Anthony Edwards right now. So, I mean, if I had to put money on it right now, I'd still rock with Denver, but my gut feeling wants to tell me that Minnesota's going to win.
A lot of times that can be the smart play. Good buy low price for anyone who thinks Denver's just going to roll over and die. They haven't really been watching the Nuggets the last few years. The team's as resilient as they come. That's what Q thinks about the series. Kendrick Perkins taking it a bit of a step forward.
I'm going to tell you this. The Minnesota Timberwolves are going to the NBA Finals. I know that much. As long as they're healthy, that wasn't a fluke what we saw last night. This is who they've been all season long. A bunch of dogs, some nasty wolves.
I mean,
he's not wrong. He's not wrong. They have been dogs. They are nasty wolves. I get that. But let's not just forget who they're playing. They are playing the defending champs. It's not like Denver's going to roll over and die because they lost one game at home. They're still dogs themselves. So for him to say that they're going to the NBA Finals after one game, I feel like is a little bit out there.
Also worth keeping in mind, and we talk about this on the show all the time, the idea of shooting regression, whether positive or negative. When a team is operating outside of its statistical average, whether it's three-point range, whether it's field goal in general, oftentimes in the next game, you'll see a law of averages type situation kick in where great shooting will come back down and poor shooting will come back up. You know, it's why you hear about the zigzag theory with people betting playoff games in both basketball and hockey, because teams tend to regress towards the mean. Minnesota shot 52% from the floor in that game. That was their 15th best performance in 87 games played this year. So it's not much of a stretch to say it's somewhat of an unsustainable number. But in terms of Minnesota winning this series, we talked about this Friday. It is absolutely worth driving this point home again. The director of basketball operations for the Minnesota Timberwolves, Tim Connolly, came over from Denver a few years ago. He was the general manager in Denver. He left that job. He took the Minnesota job. The first move he made was giving up as much as you can possibly remember in the trade for Rudy Gobert, which many people criticized. Gobert comes over. Within that deal and others, he was unrelenting in his support of Jaden McDaniels, was not willing to trade or part with Jaden McDaniels. He was too important to what this team was going to do defensively. He came to Minnesota with one goal in mind, to beat a team or to construct a team that could beat Denver. He knew how good Denver was. He built the team necessary to take out these Denver Nuggets. So don't think of game one as a fluke by any stretch. I know you aren't. For anyone out there who's thinking, oh, it's just a lucky upset, this Minnesota team is built to go after the Denver Nuggets.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. The one part of the game that really stood out to me, though, was like the, 18-5 run that Minnesota went on, and I think they shot 71%. Like, that's not sustainable.
Correct.
Right, that's not going to be sustainable. So that's something where, you, like you said, the law of averages will kind of they'll even themselves out at some point. Now, to your point about Rudy Gobert and that trade, I have to go to the front of the congregation because I'm definitely that guy that was like, ha! That for Rudy Gobert, he is not that dude. But again, he had the bigger picture in mind, where a lot of times we'll just see the initial move and say, okay, that's strange. But he had the construction. Connolly had the construction in his mind of what he was going to do to beat that team. And so, no, it's not a fluke that they won that game. They've got to sustain it. And the one thing I've always said about Minnesota is they're not the team that normally is going to go on an 18-5 run, especially if they're below, like they're losing and they have to try to come back. That's where I feel like they're getting themselves in trouble.
Now, you want to talk about a star? We'll talk about a star all day long. Anthony Edwards plays 42 minutes, goes 17 of 29, drops 43 points. First player since Kobe Bryant to have back-to-back 40-point efforts in the NBA playoffs at an age of, what is it, 23 or younger? 22 or younger? I mean, there's so much that came out of this game from Edwards' performance. It's nothing but people relating him to Kobe and Michael, and for good reason. Fran Frischilla came out, have an NBA friend. Evan, is this a tweet? Did he send a tweet out? All right, here we go. This is a tweet from Fran Frischilla. Have an NBA friend who coached in 16 playoffs, including a couple times against Michael Jordan. Says Anthony Edwards is the closest thing he's seen to MJ and Kobe in his lifetime. At 22 years old, he's in that conversation.
I love it. You know what? I don't think he's wrong. I really don't. And, I mean, Anthony Edwards, again, has been putting himself really on the map all season long just by what he's able to do, jumping out of the gym, some of the great plays that he's making, and consistently putting the team on his back and delivering victories like he did in game one and another 40-point performance. The dude is fantastic. And, again, the NBA world is really getting to know who Anthony Edwards is.
Over his last three games, Edwards has put up 119 points. That is the most over a three-game span in Timberwolves postseason history and the most over a three-game span by a player at age 22 or younger since, I'm not sure how you pronounce this, LeBron James? Yeah, LeBron James, 2006. Like
LeBron.
All the stats in front of us as to what Edwards are doing just center around three names: LeBron, Michael Jordan, and Kobe Bryant. It's just franchise record after franchise record for this kid. I asked Carlin this last week. I want to get your take, Q Myers. we keep talking about new faces in the NBA, right? Like Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, LeBron James, old guard, easing their way into the latter stages of their career. Who's going to be the next face? Anthony Edwards' name keeps popping up. Did we just skip over the Luka Doncic era? Is Anthony Edwards that good that we're just going to bypass the era that was supposed to be Luka's and give it right to Ant?
I mean, there's a couple things I look at when I think about that. It's a great question. I think that, yes, Anthony Edwards is that great, but I also think that a lot of people that watch the NBA, enjoy the NBA, get kind of annoyed by Luka and his antics. I know I do. I'll speak for myself.
That's fair.
He's a fantastic player. I'm so tired of him crying. He cries after everything.
And plays no defense.
And plays no defense. Is just, I mean, cries and cries and cries. It's like, okay, dude, that was five plays ago. Like, get back into it. And that's what annoys me with Luka.
Love it. Lock in, because today's going to be a big show. That is just the tip of the iceberg recapping what happened Saturday night. Tonight there's a huge showdown between Denver and Minnesota. We'll have the full preview for you. We've also got the big showdown in one of the all-time great NBA playoff rivalries that's set to resume. That is coming up next. He's Q Myers. I'm Joe Fortenbaugh. This is Carlin versus Joe on ESPN Radio.
This is the Carlin versus Joe podcast on ESPN Radio.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Carlin versus Joe. Pizza money alert.
Pizza, pizza.
Decent little weekend, 4-2. We got the Canelo fight. We got our basketball. We got our hockey. We flamed out big time in UFC. So 4-2 plus 1.6 units. Here we go. We got two player props for tonight's game between the Knicks and the Pacers. On the Knicks side, we're going to go Jalen Brunson under 9.5 assists. That's priced in the neighborhood of minus 150. This isn't a matchup where he does a ton of facilitating. Averaged about 6.5 assists per game on the season. In the Philadelphia series, he hit this mark in about 3 of 6 games when Philly was trying to force him into a facilitator role. Indiana's not really going to do that. They'll let him score. 3 games against Indiana this year, 6 assists, 1 assist, 4 assists, well below this mark. So pizza money number one is Jalen Brunson under 9.5 assists. We're also going to play Tyrese Halliburton of the Pacers under 31.5 par. Par stands for points plus assists plus rebounds. Add them all up. That's your par. We're going under 31.5. He's averaging 31.4 per game through the playoffs. On the road, that dips to 26. Playing with a back injury, Knicks are going to be coming for him. Pizza money's 1 and 2. Brunson under 9.5 assists. Halliburton under 31.5 par. And since we're talking Knicks-Pacers, let's revisit some history in this storied rivalry.
Miller open again. Two-pointer. Reggie Miller giving the choke side to Spike Lee.
John Stokes with the to the NBA Finals.
And a steal. Miller retreats to the three-point line and hits again. Reggie Miller scoring 8 points in the final 32 seconds.
Johnson. is fouled and hit.
And it was Miller time, 17 in the fourth quarter. The Indiana Pacers on their way to the NBA Finals.
The Knicks season is over, and for the first time in 9 years, the Indiana Pacers back in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Alongside Q Myers, I'm Joe Fortenball. This is Carlin versus Joe on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Q, I love the history between these two because it's like highlight from the 90s, highlight from the 90s, highlight from the 90s, highlight from 2000, highlight from 2013, Roy Hibbert on Carmelo Anthony. Like sliding that one in there. But we haven't seen a whole lot from the Pacers. No. And to be honest, from the Knicks in that time, it's going to be nice to see these two go toe-to-toe tonight.
It really will be. And for the longest, we've been trying to help the Knicks get back there, right? We've been trying to hope that the Knicks would be a relevant team again. And, you know, finally they're back where, you know, they have been gone from for so long, and then going up against the Pacers, and we know what that rivalry was like, as we heard from those highlights right there. And so, yeah, I'm looking forward to this series. It could go multiple different ways, obviously, but it's just like there's so many different storylines, I feel like, in this series that I'm looking forward to see how it plays out.
Knicks are a big favorite here. Minus 270 to win the series. Pacers plus 210 on the comeback. I know Halliburton's not 100%, but the Knicks just came off a six-game war with Philadelphia, and it feels like most people have already anointed the Knicks as the biggest threat to the Celtics, which would happen, assuming both teams handle their business, in the next round, the conference finals. We were talking to Brian Windhorst on this show last week. We asked him if they were the biggest threat, and he's just like, hold on a second. Like, the Knicks still need to get through the winner of the next matchup between Indiana and Milwaukee. It hadn't concluded at that point. And we kind of were like, eh, I mean, yeah, you're true. It's a formality. Do the Pacers pose much of a threat here?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, the Knicks, it's not like they're just some juggernaut, right? I mean, if they go cold, they go cold.
Yeah.
If they start turning the ball over, they start turning it over in a rapid pace. Like, we saw that great series with the 76ers go back and forth, but make no mistake about it, the Knicks allowed the 76ers to hang in there multiple times as well. It's not like they're just some well-oiled machine all the time. They make some mistakes at times that make you scratch your head with what's going on. There's times that you look at Tibbs on the sideline, and he's going through his mind like, what in the hell are we doing out there? So, yeah, I think that they better not go in there thinking that they're going to fast-track their way to the Boston Celtics. They got to handle their business against the Pacers.
This is a huge series for Tibbs because, as a coach, you have to change gears dramatically from what you just saw and what you just went through in a series against Philadelphia, a defensive grind. You're going against Joel Embiid, the emergence of Tyrese Maxey, lower scoring, slower paced, slug them out, versus this matchup against the Pacers, who play virtually no defense but are one of the best shooting teams in the NBA. They want to push pace. More than anything else, they want to fly up and down the court. They want to get out in transition. They want to catch you off guard. And when you just left it all out there for an 82-game regular season, and then you left it all out there for a six-game series that you won 4-2 but came across a lot closer than that to those who were watching each night, this is a series that's going to be ratcheted up. Like, the Pacers are going to get out there, and they're going to get you running. And I'm wondering what the Knicks' legs are going to look like in the fourth quarter if these games are close, considering what the Philadelphia series look like and what these games against Indiana are going
to
look like.
You know, the funny thing about this, when I think about the Pacers, I think back to the old scouting report when it came to Jerry Rice. Well, he's not the fastest guy. What'd they always say? If you see the back of his jersey, you're not catching him.
Right.
That's how it is, I feel like, with the Pacers. They want you to see the back of their jersey, because if they get up on you, more times than not, you're not catching them. Right? And that includes the New York Knicks, because they have Jalen Brunson that can light up in a heartbeat. We know that. But they don't really have a bunch of guys that all of a sudden could just run and gun. Like you said, I mean, the Pacers want to out-athlete you. They want to get up and down that court. They're not worried about playing a lick of defense. They're going to try to get to 100 as quickly as possible, and you better keep pace.
Q Myers, Joe Fortenball, Carlin versus Joe on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. We started the conversation with a bunch of famous highlights from playoff series involving the Knicks and the Pacers. There was the Roy Hibbert block of Carmelo Anthony. That was back in 2013. There's the famous Reggie Miller moment in 1995. Patrick Ewing was in there. Larry Johnson was in there. As you start to sort through this series, beginning with game one tonight, your thought as to who could be that player that leaves the lasting image on this series, the guy that when we look back on this 10 years from now, we say to ourselves, oh, it was the Brunson game, insert player here.
It feels like it's so easy to say the Brunson game or the Halliburton game. Like, that's the default, right? So I kind of want to go, like, when everyone zigs, I kind of want to zag. So I feel like I want to go with, like, Hart, right? And just because he has up and down moments, right? All of a sudden, he'll have a really bad shooting game, and then all of a sudden, he'll hit a couple buckets late in the game where they needed him at the most. I don't know if I can count on him to consistently, you know, come up with some big-time plays, but I feel like there's going to be one game where he's going to step up and do something that we're all going to look back or talk about the next day and say, wow, that was a moment. That was big. So I'm going to ride with Hart from the Knicks and say that he's going to have that moment.
I feel like there's such a great angle to this series that's been overlooked because we've looked at these two as teams, which is fantastic. We don't necessarily look at them as individuals outside of Brunson, but both these teams helped themselves to rating the Toronto Raptors during the season, right? Like, the big move for the Pacers was to bring in Pascal Siakam. Right. The big move for the Knicks was to bring in OG Anunoby. Now they find themselves in the playoffs running into one another. It feels like it's going to be one of those guys that has to put it over the top. I mean, the Anunoby minutes for the Knicks since he came over, especially what he means to them defensively, how many games they've won versus how many they've lost since he got there, and Siakam to the Pacers.
Yeah.
That's a more interesting scenario because he came over and then a lot of guys started getting dinged up and they weren't able to spend a ton of time trying to gel and build this thing out together, but it doesn't matter. They got through Milwaukee and they find themselves here. Siakam and Anunoby, the two former Raptors getting to go toe-to-toe in this series. I think that's a fascinating line of questioning.
I just came up with it. It's going to be the Dante DiVincenzo game. I mean, seriously, think about how many three-pointers he hit this year, a career high, right? I mean, That's it. I'm changing. Hey, asterisk, change, whatever you want to do, edit, whatever you want to call it, I'm doing it. I'm sticking. My game is going to be the Dante DiVincenzo game. He's going to go off for like 40-something and have a ton of three-pointers. There you go.
I can get behind that because we've seen it. I think that's what this series is going to be defined by are the streaky shooting performances because that's who Indiana is. Anytime you want to look at them, and tonight they're a dog of 5.5 points. The thing with the Pacers is they're a high variance team. And what I mean by that is they have a really high ceiling and a really low floor.
Right.
A team like the Knicks is going to find themselves very consistent. You're going to get a consistent, hardworking effort every night. They have games that are better than others, but the Knicks' worst isn't really that bad. They are good enough to prevent that. It's something I always talk about with Nikola Jokic. What makes him so great is that when you compare him to Embiid, what's a Jokic off night look like? Right?
Not a triple-double?
Yeah. It's still like 18, 14, and 8. Like,
right.
He still has a monster impact in the game. He's got a higher floor than anybody in the NBA. So for the Knicks, that's them. They don't have that low floor. The Pacers do because the Pacers are just a bomb-it-out shooting team, and when they catch fire, they can bury you. The second half of that game against Milwaukee to close it out, there was nothing that could be done. Bucks couldn't do anything. T.J. McConnell's coming off the bench red hot. You're doomed.
Yeah, absolutely. That's who the Pacers are. They are that team. Again, they're going to run and gun, and if they get hot, they get hot, and you better be able to keep pace. That's my only concern for the Knicks.
Yeah.
Because when the Pacers do get hot, they are a very tough team to beat.
We were talking about this a bit this morning, the idea that there might be one coach in the NBA who's going out of his way to tie himself to a sinking ship. We're going to have that for you next. He's Q Myers. I'm Joe Fortenbaugh. Carlin versus Joe on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
This is the Carlin versus Joe podcast on ESPN Radio.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Darvin Ham's Lakers coaching tenure's over after two seasons.
I don't think this was a LeBron James decision or issue.
There is collaboration between LeBron and AD and the front office and the ownership group. So that would not surprise me in the least if they have some input.
If you allow LeBron James to play this kind of risk board game, and when it comes to a new head coach, in 2 years, you're still going to have that head coach, and LeBron James is not going to be around. If you're the Lakers, you better show some backbone.
Lot to sort through in the National Basketball Association. Thankfully, we have Q Myers here. I'm Joe Fortenbaugh, Carlin versus Joe on ESPN Radio. Thank you for riding along with us today. It is greatly appreciated. Friday, we got the news that the Lakers were parting ways with head coach Darvin Ham. We all began to speculate as to what was going to be next for the Lakers. And when you're thinking about what's next for the Lakers, you start looking at different head coaches around the NBA, whether they're currently employed or were formerly employed, who would make a lot of sense. We also tried to sort through what was happening in Phoenix and whether or not a coaching change would be on the horizon for the Suns. Well, one of the names that continued to surface, Ty Lue, head coach of the Los Angeles Clippers, not sure he's going to make it to the market. Here's Adrian Wojnarowski Friday on NBA Today with the latest on Ty Lue.
I don't believe it's realistic based on this. Ty Lue still has a year left on his contract, and the Clippers are determined to do a long-term deal with Ty Lue, I'm told. You know, they want him to be their coach for a very long time. And so, listen, that's a conversation that will happen after the playoffs are over. But they love the job he did this season. They love the job that he's done there. This is an organization that, by all indications, however this series ends up, wants to re-sign Paul George, James Harden, try to improve that roster around those two, of course, and Kawhi Leonard.
Interesting scenario here. Interesting scenario. Ty Lue, who was linked to the Lakers job in terms of wild speculation. Hey, could the Lakers go get Ty Lue? Apparently not going to be available, Q, because he's got 1 year left on his deal with the Clippers and is planning to sign an extension per Woj. Does that surprise you at all?
Yeah, if I'm Ty Lue, I'm questioning that. Why? Why would he sign an extension right now? What if the Clippers, the team, not the organization, but the team, what have they shown? Right? I mean, Kawhi is consistently injured. Not that he's not a great player. We all know he is. But consistently in the playoffs, where is he at? On the bench. Paul George, he's inconsistent at best. James Harden, I don't have to say about him. We know what he is in the playoffs, right? So if I'm Ty Lue, I'm about to be one of the hottest coaching commodities. And, oh, by the way, the team that plays in the same gym as us, you know, just fired their head coach. So there's some leverage there where, you know, there could be conversations had. Whatever the case may be, I feel like I'm one of the hottest commodities out there. I might not be so eager to sign an extension.
Is it possible he knows something that we don't in terms of what the Lakers, or I should say what the Clippers, could turn themselves into after this coming summer? Paul George is headed for free agency, and he's linked to Philadelphia. He's linked to Orlando. Now, not saying he wants to go to either. It's just right. That's where we speculate he could go. He could fit teams that could use him, teams that have the money. If he's gone and you're left with, you know, Harden and an injured Kawhi Leonard, it doesn't really look as if that's the most appealing team to chase a championship. You are opening a new building. Maybe that has some appeal. I mean, maybe a little.
You're still in L.A. Right? You're still with the Clippers. You'll always be Lil Bruh to the Lakers, regardless of if you be in a better team or not. You're still Lil Bruh.
Okay, so then let's look at it like this. Is it possible that he's sitting there saying, all right, you know what? Maybe if I somehow get out of this deal, I could go join the Los Angeles Lakers. Is it possible you think to yourself, you know what? To be LeBron James' 10th head coach, I don't necessarily know if I want that for my career. Maybe it's a little bit more comfortable with Ballmer and the Clippers since the expectations are so much lower than it would be with the Lakers. Like, is it possible you just don't want to join the LeBron train in L.A.?
Right, yeah, that's very possible, but it's not just about the LeBron train in L.A. I mean, this guy, again, is going to be one of the hottest commodities when available, so why not put himself and give himself the best position? If the Clippers want you right now, guess what they're going to want after one more year? They're going to still want you. So why not? Why be in a rush to sign an extension? We don't have to. Like, most of the time we say you don't want to be a lame duck coach. This might be a scenario where it's okay to be a lame duck coach because you have a million suitors. It's like when, you know, we were all single. We wanted to have 10 girls throwing themselves at us. We didn't, but we wanted to, right? I had option A and option A, and that was it.
Option A was looking good to me if I could even find an option A back in the day. Right?
Right,
like, there are times where it's like, what, anything would be option A at this point. I would love that.
Facts.
You know, there are situations we've seen in the postseason. I go back, and this is a little bit more than a decade ago, but that year that Derrick Rose got injured at the end of game one of the opening round against Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a famous example of an 8 seed beating a 1, but not really, because the star MVP of the 1 seed was injured at the end of, I believe it was game one in that series. So when that series ends, everyone goes, yeah, that's really unfortunate for the Bulls that Rose got hurt. It's really unfortunate. When you see this happen with the Clippers, it's not really an unfortunate situation. This is who the Clippers are.
Right.
Like, every year you get to the postseason, and there are several question marks that we discuss throughout the course of the year. Health is a big one. Whether or not certain stars, to your point, would step up and be able to perform at the highest level in the postseason. And can they do it 4 times in 7 games, time 4 to win a championship? And this is yet another year where all those question marks came and went, and it was right. The same thing. Kawhi couldn't play. James Harden wasn't great. Westbrook nowhere to be found. And then next year, what are we going to do? Like, what are you going to do with this roster that's going to make us think any differently? Any differently at all? Like, why would I be even willing to venture a guess as to how next year? We're not talking about them flaming out in the conference finals. They lost in 6 in the opening round. They were a zero factor in this year's postseason.
Exactly right. And that's the thing about especially James Harden. I look at him and I just don't see him as a winner. Right, I just see him as a really good player that can get some really good stats. He's obviously not the James Harden he was at one point, but he can still have a good game here or there, but he's not going to be a guy who's a consistent winner. So when they made the move for Harden, I was very skeptical. Then they looked really good, and I said, wow, hold on, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's something to this. And then I said, wait, hold on, that's the regular season. Let them roll through the playoffs, and then I don't mind coming to the front of the congregation and saying I was wrong. Well, clearly, I'm still sitting down. I don't need to go to the front of the congregation. I have nothing to say that I was wrong about.
So if Ty Lue's out of the equation for the Lakers, are there any names floating around there out there now? And we'll get there at some point. It's Monday. Are there any names floating around now that make any sense to you that they should be pursuing for the next head coach of the organization?
I like Jason Kidd, but he just signed an extension with the Mavericks, right? And I think that Jason Kidd was more of a factor to them winning the championship in L.A. than Frank Vogel was, right? And so I'm very much Team Kidd, but Dallas was smart to go ahead and say, you know what, let's go ahead and re-up you before those guys come coming for you.
It feels like there were a handful of organizations that headed into the weekend. Saul Darvinham got fired. Yep. Heard all the talk about who was on the short list and immediately went out and made sure they locked up their guys. Dallas with Jason Kidd, the Clippers with Ty Lue. The name J.J. Redick's been flown around out there. Carlin doesn't necessarily like the idea of Redick. He doesn't think that makes a lot of sense for them. Do you think J.J. Redick could work with the Lakers?
I mean, no, only because it's so unproven. Right, I don't know anything. I don't know what J.J. Redick as a head coach is like. I know what J.J. Redick as an analyst is like, and he's fantastic. But that doesn't mean that you're going to turn great coach just because you're a great analyst.
Yeah, when it comes to whether or not LeBron James should have a lot of say in who's coming in to coach him next, there's a debate there. We'll get into that later today. Redick, a very smart basketball mind, but that's taking on a massive project very early.
Yes.
Like, very early in your coaching tenure, you are going up with one of the biggest personalities and some of the most pressure possible under the brightest lights in one of the biggest cities in, you know, NBA history when it comes to Los Angeles.
Tell you what, that coach that's in H-Town right now, Coach Udoka, could probably do some good things.
He's a
just
hell
saying.
Of a coach.
Just saying. He's a hell of a coach.
Look, he had his issues in Boston, obviously, and that led to his dismissal, obviously. But he showed up in Houston, and that was a franchise, for anyone paying attention last year, completely rudderless.
Yep.
Completely rudderless in the locker room. No culture, no respect, no anything. It was a mess down there. He came in, and they went on a nice run at the end of the season. They got better throughout the course of the year. He did a hell of a job. All right, speaking of which, you got to wonder, there's some decision-making that's made that sometimes you question, and if you didn't see this Netflix roast last night of Tom Brady, you got to wonder today if Brady's regretting any of this decision to get up there in front of everybody. Fantastic night, several hilarious moments. We haven't had a chance to talk about it, so we're going to get to that next. He's Q Myers, I'm Joe Fortenbaugh, Carlin versus Joe on ESPN Radio.
This is the Carlin versus Joe podcast on ESPN Radio.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple.
Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Right now is the perfect time to gear up and connect to quality candidates, and there's no better way to do that than through Indeed. It's the hiring platform that makes it easy to attract, screen, and interview candidates all in the same place. Their interview tool helps you schedule and conduct video interviews right from your employer dashboard. Nix the hassle. Start hiring at Indeed.com/credit. Ladies and gentlemen, happy Monday. Thanks for spending some of your time with us today. Alongside Q Myers, I'm Joe Fortenball. This is Carlin versus Joe on ESPN Radio. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Couple notes for you. NBA playoffs on ESPN Radio continue Tuesday with the Dallas Mavericks at the Oklahoma City Thunder. Game one coverage begins at 8 p.m. Eastern. All right, Q. Did you see any of this Tom Brady Netflix roast last night? It was completely live from what I've been told. I saw a lot of clips have been surfacing. I wanted to see where you were on this.
No, I saw a lot of clips surfacing on Twitter. That's how I tuned in. Look, man, I'm here in Las Vegas. I cover the Raiders like a glove, and I know Tom Brady is, you know, in conversations about being part owner, but Tom Brady, the whole Patriot, everything is still a little bit of a sore spot when you come to Raider Nation. Just saying.
I worked in the Bay Area for 6 years, and I remember I had to do it, but every year on the anniversary of the Tuck Rule, I just had to bring it up, and you would watch the phones light up, and it would be so many people asking, why would you need to revisit this?
Yeah, I'm wondering that right now. Like, I thought we were homeboys. You've been trying to get me to do a show, and then 47 minutes in, you're like, oh, by the way, Q, Tuck Rule, what do you think?
Because of that exact reaction. Like, the phones would just light up, and I'd be like, well, that's the end of today's show. We're going to be able to take these all the way to the end. Such an iconic moment in history. It's an absolute gut punch to Raider fans. But, no, you speak the mind of many Raider fans. With that, with Brady, with their relationship to him, and over the last 20 years, how that's all played out. So if you didn't know, if you haven't been following this on social, Brady was roasted last night. It was on Netflix. Normally we see something like that on Comedy Central, but Netflix had it. It was live. Star-studded affair. Some of these clips are surfacing. Absolutely hilarious. Here's the thing. We can't play so much of it for you because, well, there's rules. And number two, a lot of it is way outside the lines of something we'd be able to say or produce here on ESPN Radio. But there were some really good moments. Rob Gronkowski getting up last night, wanting to do a shot, stop traffic on that one. Take a listen.
Tonight we're doing a shot, baby. And yes. Oh, man.
Sound it out, Rob. Sound it out.
All right. Where am I? Where am I?
Shot. You got it.
All right. Oh, yeah. We're doing a shot. And don't worry. It doesn't have any strawberries in it, Tom. Nightshades, inflammation, whatever you're talking about. And it was approved by your mom and Bill's boss, Alex Guerrero.
There were a lot of jokes last night that you'd have to be a football fan of to be able to understand, because I think Alex Guerrero's name popped in there like 20 times last night.
Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, that guy obviously, you know, has been tied to Tom forever, and his whole meal plan and everything that he's going through, and, you know, all his dietary, I guess is the way to put it, those kind of rules that he has for his life.
His personal trainer, the TB12 method, all that good stuff. Kim Kardashian made an appearance last night. She got booed relentlessly when she took the stage. She wasn't even a roaster. I think she was just coming up for a toast. She's booed. They had to get everyone to calm down. I still have no idea why she got that loud of a response, at least in terms of the negative. But here she is roasting Brady last night.
I think it's so great the way that you're showing everyone that even after winning 7 Super Bowls, you can still have a midlife crisis. Honestly, it's hard for me to watch people roast you, but I think enough of my family members have helped defend former football players. So I'm just here tonight to support you and celebrate you. Retirement isn't easy. It can be a lot like a bad breakup. So I'll give you the same advice that I give all my exes. Good luck knowing the best is behind you. Congratulations, Tom. Cheers, everyone, to Tom Brady.
Despite all the time in Hollywood, not exactly a master at delivering the punchline, but works through it nonetheless. A lot of OJ jokes, a lot of Aaron Hernandez jokes last night. Like, there's, if you get a chance to get into this, you really need to kind of brace yourself for the fact that they cross about as many lines as humanly possible, which is the very essence of a roast.
That's exactly what it's all about. I did see on Twitter the little highlight of Tom Brady getting up and basically saying, don't ever say that joke again when he's talking about Robert Kraft and the massage parlor. I thought that that was kind of cool, but again, that was what I took in from Twitter.
That was the bridge too far for Brady on that one. By all accounts, he handled it pretty well outside of that. I have no idea how you can get up there and deal with stuff like this. Like, there are very good-natured people. Like, I remember watching Rob Lowe, and Rob Lowe just seems very much, you know, going with the flow of everything. It's a joke here, it's a joke there. He's having a laugh. Brady did a relatively good job with it. It just seems like you go into it thinking, all right, this isn't going to be so bad. I'm going to find a way to have some fun with it. I don't want people to see that it's getting to me at all. But they just go looking to rip off every possible scab from every possible mistake you've ever made in your life.
No, that's what they're trying to do. But, I mean, at the end of the day, it's nothing but 100% attention for him. It's just nothing but keeping his name out there and getting everybody to talk about it, and we're talking about it the next day. So as many bad, you know, jokes or comments that were made that were funny, but at the same time, you know, just bad references or whatever. I mean, it you got to have some fun with it. And when you won as many Super Bowls as he has, I mean, is it really anything that they could say that's that bad?
It does look good for him in the sense that he always kind of came across as a guy who was very, very specific and very, very detail-oriented when it came to protecting his image.
Yeah.
And to go up there and to willingly step into an arena like that, you know there's going to be a lot of risk and a lot of potential damage. Like, a lot of people went after the divorce.
Right.
They were making all those types of jokes. And when it was all said and done, you know, it kind of shows the softer side of Brady in the sense that, like, yeah, this guy can have a good time. Do you remember after the Super Bowl win?
Yeah.
With the trophy and the drunkenness
right.
on the boats in Florida. And everyone's like, man, we've never seen Tom Brady drunk before. Like, you kind of get to see the different side of him. It humanizes him a little bit.
That's when we learned that he actually had a personality, is when he was in Tampa Bay and then he won the Super Bowl and he's drunk as a skunk and he's on the boat. He's throwing the Lombardi. Like, that was cool because at that point I said, oh, Tom Brady is just like the rest of us. You know, he just likes to have a good time. He wants to go out there and party and let his hair down. And once he got to Tampa Bay, he was allowed to do that. So I think at that moment then, at least for me, I realized that, oh, this guy is actually a different dude. He's not really as bad as I thought, as bad as it looked like the evil empire held him to be. Maybe it was them and not him.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I mean, he's all business. He's as focused and as disciplined and as detail-oriented as can be. But I've talked to some guys who know him from his playing days, and they've said, look, you don't realize he's actually a lot of fun. He's a lot of fun. He's got a great sense of humor. You just never see it.
Right.
He was never going to necessarily show with the media, and he's obviously all business when he's on the field. And that's the type of thing that separates him from literally everyone else out there. Like, you're not going to find any dude at the top of the mountain in their respective profession, and they're going to come across as relatable.
Right.
You know that? Like,
yeah.
They're not relatable because they can't be relatable. Because in order to get to that point, they have to be very, very different. There's this story about Novak Djokovic. At one point, I want to say it was like 2013 or 14, don't quote me on this, but he had won some tournament. There was some major he had won, and he just sat down and he allowed himself one square of a Hershey bar. So you know how there's, how many squares are on the Hershey bar? It's like 3 per line times what, like 4 lines? Maybe there's 12 of them?
I guess.
One square.
Right.
Opened
right.
up the bar, allowed right. himself one square, and that was it. Like, that was the huge reward from winning Wimbledon or whatever it was. And then that was it. Right back to insane discipline. Brady right. was like that. Jordan was like that. Like, did anyone watch The Last Dance with Jordan and think, oh, Jordan would probably be a great guy to hang out with? He seems really cool and chill. It's the opposite of that. Jordan right. seemed overly intense.
No, he did. He did. But again, like, Brady on the boat, man, just being helped off there. Yeah. Like I literally could say, oh, I remember that day that I had. Oh, yeah, that was. I remember that one, too. Yeah, that was the day right after this dance or whatever. I went to the club, and my buddies had to help me back to the house. Or, you know what I mean? Like, that's the day that I realized that Brady was just like the rest of us, outside of, obviously, his work ethic and what he was able to do on the field. But you know, like you said, to his credit, the personality and being able to kind of normalize himself, he was able to do.
Yeah, Brady, in these 8 minutes of his 45 years of existence, really comes across as a guy I can relate to. I've gotten too drunk before, too. I haven't won the 7 Super Bowls or racked up the MVPs or the money or any of that stuff.
I mean, that's a little bit of, I mean, who cares about that stuff? I'm talking about the important stuff. Being drunk as a skunk and someone having to leave you at the door of your house.
Brady helped his legacy at the end of his career. Is one legend hurting his by playing too long? Q Myers, Joe Fornball, Carlin versus Joe on ESPN Radio.
This is the Carlin versus Joe podcast on ESPN Radio.